very much.
Our next case this morning is number 23-1550, Risen Energy Co. v. United States. Ms. Salzman.
All right. Good morning. May it please the Court. Alexandra Salzman on behalf of Appellant Risen Energy. This case has two issues. We submit that Commerce did not rely on the best available information for the EVA and backsheet film inputs and did not rely on the best available information for the financial ratios. So looking first at these two inputs for backsheet and EVA, they both turn on the same issue. Is this a film or is this a sheet? And we've submitted it as a film, which is also what Commerce had done in the prior reviews for these inputs and had classified it as such. RISN also put on its own specification information on these inputs where it called its backsheet a film and refers to its back, I mean, its EVA as a film and refers to its backsheet as a film. Then RISN also put on information, more generally, information on the internet about the solar industry at large, where they are also calling both of these inputs films instead of sheets. And so based on this information, RISN's own experience, the solar industry information, these should be regarded as films.
Okay, but our past cases suggest that industry standards are highly relevant in interpreting.
Yes, but there are not industry standards on this record specific to these inputs. The ASTM...
Specific to these inputs. I mean, it doesn't have to be specific to particular inputs. It's just a question of whether the industry standards distinguish between film and...
We would say that these should not be considered industry standards. That's if you look at the details of what they both are, there's these two ASTM standards. One of them is about measuring thickness. It's not saying this is sheet or this is film. It's not defining it. It's not the purpose of that standard is to define between these things. And the second standard
it
is about...
It does refer to film as being less than 0.25.
It does say it is, could be an optional term that is used here, but the whole point of that standard, again, it's not about here's what sheet is, here's what film is. It's about these highly specific measuring of thickness between...
This is a very factual issue. Though,
yes,
right?
It is.
It is. So your view is no reasonable fact finder could rely on that two ASTM specifications, right?
That these two would not clearly define between sheet and film for the solar industry. That is not clear on this record from these standards, because the point of these standards is not to make this distinction.
That's not our standard of review. If Commerce could have sided with you and your evidence, but equally could have sided with the way it did, we have to affirm, don't we?
Commerce is supposed to be relying on the best available information, and part of that is also the specificity. So we'd say if they've relied on something that is not specific
but
to the
input. Is it unreasonable to view the ASTM standards as the best available evidence, and in particular as better than the type of evidence you relied on?
Right, I'm aware. We would say that a reasonable mind cannot determine that these standards would define that it is sheet. And we've said in the alternative that if we're really going to sit and say this is ambiguous, we cannot determine on the record this is sheet or film, then the best available information would have been to rely on both HCS as our ultimate conclusion, if we're going to say
the averaging answer, where you say you should average the two.
So, right at the end of ultimately, if the court does not agree that a reasonable mind could not agree that these standards define sheet and film, then that means that they're not defined on the record; they're unclear. So then the best available information is to rely on both of them, as opposed to what Commerce did, which was to rely only on sheet and exclude film.
A lot of judgment involved in determining best available. I mean, I don't feel equipped to say this is the best available or that's the best available. I can see saying that the ASTM is the best available because it does give a specific amount. It does tell you what the difference is between film and sheet, but it's not limited to solar.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you could say, well, how the parties characterize their own goods could be better because it's solar. But then again, it's not as good because it's, you know, it's self-serving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a generic reference separate and apart from the parties and the litigation. So how do I know what the criteria is for best available? And so it makes it really hard to say something, you know, the determination here is unreasonable.
Mm-hmm. We understand it is a difficult standard because there are, the court is not allowed to reweigh the evidence, but instead needs to decide, right, is this a reasonable interpretation to decide this? And we've submitted that it's not because, again, these standards are not, the point of these standards is not to define between film and sheet. That's not what they're doing. And ultimately, what we're relying on is an HTS in Malaysia, that Malaysian producers
They are designed to distinguish between film and sheet, but they're just not designed in the solar context.
No, we'd say they're not designed to define between film and sheet at all.
Well, they do define what film is.
One of these standards says it's about how to determine thickness of film specimens. It's, if you look through it, and it's not going, this is sheet, this is film. There's one line that says an optional term could be film. The rest of it is not about that at all. It's about how do you measure it, because it's about these technical specifications. It's not about this issue. And we would just submit that ultimately, the HTS being relied on are Malaysian companies importing these materials, and they're saying, is this a sheet or a film when they're importing it? And we would submit that it then makes sense to look at what are people in the industry doing, which we've put on not only ours, but other companies in the solar industry. They think it's film. When they're importing it, they're putting it as film. And that would be determinative. That's what a reasonable mind should be considering when weighing between when looking at these two different options here, or ultimately, if it is truly ambiguous.
Can I take you to your second issue?
Yes,
I found
that's where
that I'm very
about.
Complicated. is there just like a 30-second high-level summary common sense that I might be able to hold on to as to what it is you say is the error Commerce made on that second?
On the financial ratios.
Exactly.
Yes. So high-level would be that Commerce relied on this note 17, which it does not on inventories, which is not something Commerce usually relies on in making these financial calculations. And it relied on that note.
What page of the appendix is note 17 on?
It is 6688. So high level, Commerce took this note to be able to basically bifurcate material costs, labor costs, energy costs from overhead costs. That's what it's trying to do in the financial ratio calculation, because it took the cost of goods sold, it subtracts costs from it, and then there's a remaining cost of goods sold. And it's trying to get that remaining cost of goods sold to be one thing. Is it overhead, or is it material, labor, and energy? And we've said it's material, labor, and energy. Commerce has said it's overhead.
You're saying it's work in progress, and they're saying it's overhead. Is that fair?
Not precisely. And I would also point that I think the more important note for you to look at in the financial statement is not note 17, but note 2.12, which is on 6666.
And before you explain why that's an important one, I just want to not lose track of the dispute. It's whether that remainder goes to overhead, which is what Commerce said, or to MLE, which is where you would put it?
We are saying that you should not really use this note at all in our financial ratios. But
where should the remainder go?
The remainder should go to MLE,
okay.
And that you should not use this note at all.
So is it fair for me to say the dispute is whether the remainder goes to overhead or to MLE?
Over to MLE, correct.
Okay.
And so why, in your view, should it go to MLE instead of overhead?
So it's a Commerce has decided, usually Commerce...
I thought it was because you said it represented work in progress. You're now saying that's not right?
That's part of it. I think the main point is that this note does not allow Commerce to exclude everything other than overhead.
I'm not understanding it.
I know.
This note says that inventory includes work in progress. So to the extent that your theory rests on the notion that the inventory number doesn't include work in progress. This note seems to contradict that. On the other hand, the government's theory that it represents overhead also seems to be contradicted by this note, because the note says that inventory includes overhead.
That is precisely our point, is that this note, these inventory costs, it does include some labor and energy. It also includes overhead costs. So this note is not helpful in any way for...
Yeah, but that leaves me in a situation where I don't know what the difference between inventory and costs of goods sold is, whether it represents overhead or something else. I'm just uninformed.
Right. So we have defined using the IFRS definition.
What do you think it is? If it's not work in progress, what is it?
Well, it's a combination. It is raw material costs, but not including their labor and energy. It is works in progress and finished good that includes their overhead and energy.
I can argue that because this note says that the inventory number already includes those things.
I'm saying this is what it is. The inventory note and raw materials at purchase price.
I'm asking about the difference between the cost of goods sold and the inventory number. That's what we're arguing about.
The cost of goods sold would have additional overhead and additional labor and energy in it.
Why? What's the basis for that?
Because this wouldn't include labor and energy used in the raw material process. So those would be excluded, for example, in this. I mean, ultimately, we agree it is a confusing note, and ultimately we're saying it shouldn't be relied on. It doesn't make sense to use it because it can't tell you what is labor and energy and what is overhead.
Yeah,
But
my problem is I don't understand how your theory is supported. I mean, that it represents something other than overhead.
Well,
because these things that you say it represents are already in inventory, according to this note.
Right. So I'm saying that's what the inventory line item is, and it's not the same as COGS because it would be the same number. I'm saying it's unclear what all is in that difference, but it can't be overhead only because electricity and energy are not in there for raw materials, and there's already some overhead in there.
So you're not relying on this.
No. So our...
So what are you relying
on? At 6635 is our ratio calculation, and we don't use this note at all. And this is the way Commerce usually does calculate it, is we exclude the clear overhead cost of depreciation, and everything else goes to MLE. And that is what we have put forward because this note does not actually help Commerce calculate the ratios, so it shouldn't be relied on. It's an improper understanding of inventory. This isn't a line item that Commerce usually uses because it's not the same as cost of goods sold.
Well, there isn't any usually uses with respect to this particular financial statement.
Well, I'm saying Commerce calculates ratios.
In other cases, right?
No, but Commerce calculates ratios all the time, including the other Malaysian financial statements that we point out on this record. Same, the IFRS, it's the same standard they used. And the way that petitioner calculated their ratios, the way we would, also does not use an inventories note. It uses the way that we calculated them. And that is the only clear way to calculate them.
I thought the Court of International Trade found the IFRS to support what Commerce did. I think because variable expenses are supposed to be included in inventory.
There was some confusing aspects of this, especially because it was not in the original decision. All of the discussion of the IFRS came up at briefing and oral argument, which is one of our points. It was not in the underlying determination, which also led to a lot of this confusion and discussion because it wasn't in a clear decision that we could then brief afterwards. But our point about the IFRS is that is extremely common. All of the other Malaysian financial statements on the record are the same standard. So why is this being...
Do you need any evidence that supports the notion that this is a materials cost, MLE, as opposed to overhead? What's your evidence that that's what it represents? I'm not seeing it.
Well, two things. One, the definition of inventory. We put that in our brief from the IFRS and defining what it means to be an inventory. And then
I don't understand how that helps you.
Because this is a statement under IFRS. So if they're saying this is an inventory, then they need to be meeting that definition.
What is the statement and how does it help you? I don't understand what you're saying.
Okay. I guess another thing that may help is the fact that...
Well, you're not answering my question. You're sure.
I'm saying the fact that...
There's something else.
I mean, it defines it here that finished good and works in progress is cost of direct material, labor, manufacturing overheads. We're saying that this note includes, it does include, it already includes overhead, which on its own is a problem if you're saying the rest is overhead.
That is a problem for the government, but right. it doesn't support your notion that it represents something else either.
Well, I guess another thing that would help support this is our argument about the rest of the... Based on this calculation that Commerce did, it ends up that the overhead costs are significantly higher than any other statement and that depreciation is a minor part of overhead. And that is never the case in any of the other financial statements on the record. Usually, the overhead is 98% or 97% of overhead costs. And Commerce, after adding this figure to it, is now...
Depreciation is usually a very high...
is usually the vast majority of overhead. And here with this allocation, it's 30%. So it's also speaking to the fact that this leftover does not make sense that it's overhead. It's not supported.
That's your best argument?
What?
I mean, is that your best evidence? It seems like that.
I would say that supports our understanding and the definition. The fact that the inventory note alone already says it includes overhead costs would mean that this cannot be that this is every cost except for overhead left over, this remaining COGS. I'll leave my 30 seconds for rebuttal. Thank you.
All right, we'll give you 2 minutes. Ms. Akers?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'll start with the first issue regarding...
Do you start with the second issue?
I'll start with the second issue, Your Honor.
And start with the fact that this note seems to contradict your theory that the difference is overhead, because it says that overhead is already included in inventory.
Note 2.12 does state what Your Honor just said, and I'll explain Commerce's reasoned analysis here and why it was reasonable to include this unallocated amount to overhead. And it's
as additional overhead.
As additional overhead.
Okay.
Sure.
I'm all ears.
Thank you, Your Honor. And it might be helpful to refer to Appendix 7132, which is where Commerce breaks this down. There is a general cost of sales that's about $2 million. And then as you see below it, there's the inventory costs. So when Commerce is looking at the financial statement and analyzing the financial statement, it has to ask what is encompassed in the inventory costs. And note 2.12 and also the IRFS both indicate that material and labor are encompassed in inventory. And so Commerce determined that in inventory, in the 1.68 million, it includes material and labor. So that's accounted for on the financial sheet. It also determined that that includes energy. So because, and again, consistent with note 2.12 and the IFRS, so because the word inventory necessarily encompasses M, L, and E, when Commerce got to the end of its financial calculation, and there was a very small unallocated amount left. And so the question for Commerce was, well, where does this amount go? Does it go to overhead? Does it go to something else? And Commerce determined that because in the financial statements, direct costs are allocated for, this is on 7132.
So is overhead. That's your problem. I mean, 2.12 says overhead's included in inventory. It says M, L, and E is included in inventory and overhead is included in inventory. Seems to directly contradict your theory that you can treat the difference, the additional difference between inventory and cost of goods sold as overhead. So, I mean, neither side, it seems to me, has provided a coherent explanation of what the difference is between inventory and cost of goods sold, what this number could represent. I mean, I don't understand how it can represent overhead when the note says that overhead's already included in inventory.
Well, I think that's the difficult position that Commerce was in, Your Honor. There was an unallocated amount. There is a small pot of money that Commerce has to determine where does this fit in. And it could fit in an MLE or it could fit in an overhead. That's obviously the distinction here between the parties' argument. Commerce explained why it believed it was reasonable based on 2.12 and the IFRS.
It would be reasonable based on 2.1 true to treat it as overhead when 2.12 says overhead's included in inventory.
Do you agree with that, by the way, that 2.12 says overhead is included in inventory?
I don't see that directly, Your Honor, but it says manufacturing overhead.
It says finished goods and working costs of direct materials and labor and a proportion of manufacturing overheads based on normal operating capacity. And it says this is inventory is accounted for as follows. So it's stating that overhead as well as ML&E is included in the inventory number.
Perhaps the distinction, Your Honor, is this is manufacturing overhead, so this is a subset of overheads, which Commerce determined means.
This is, what are you talking about?
The reference on Appendix 6666
Your Honor. You're saying the note is talking about manufacturing.
Specifically, it says manufacturing overheads. And Commerce determined that manufacturing overheads means energy. In its expertise, that's what it determined it meant, energy.
Where does it say that?
I would point, Your Honors, to Appendix 7131 and 7132, which is Commerce's analysis on this issue.
Okay, where does it say that manufacturing overhead is limited to energy?
We could go to 7165 Appendix. Thank you for your patience. And on Appendix 7165 under Comment 3, Commerce explains that it's relying on the financial statements to calculate the financial ratios. And it is determining that labor and energy are included in the inventories.
Where does it say that the reference to overhead is a reference to energy? I don't see that.
Is it at the end of that paragraph?
Your Honor. We believed the proportion of manufacturing overheads, that's Your Honor's reference to overheads, based on normal operating capacity, to be a reference largely to energy costs.
Okay, what's the basis for that?
I would submit, Your Honor, that it's Commerce's interpretation of the financial records and its expertise in doing so. And
in other words, you're not able to point to any support for that statement?
I believe the support, Your Honor, is that the financial statement says proportion of manufacturing overheads based on normal operating capacity. And Commerce, knowing how to interpret financial statements, knows that that means
but manufacturing overhead is a fairly common term. You would think that if manufacturing overhead generally was limited to energy costs, there'd be some support for that. That wouldn't be my understanding of what manufacturing overhead is, but I'm not an expert in it. But I would have thought that if Commerce had some support for that, it would say so. I don't see the support for that notion.
I think, Your Honor, on Appendix 7165, there's two full paragraphs explaining and providing analysis and support for why a material, labor, and energy encompasses the inventory category. And because Commerce determined, and again, this is not only consistent with Note 1.21, but it's also consistent with the international standards that the plaintiff appellant agrees are relevant.
2.12, right?
Correct.
I just don't want to get more confused.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's also consistent with the international standards that the plaintiff...
There's nothing in the international standards about manufacturing overhead being limited to energy, is there?
Not limited, but the inventory encompasses material, labor, and energy.
Well, of course it does encompass that, but that doesn't mean that manufacturing overhead is limited to that.
Sure, Your Honor. And financial statements can be interpreted differently, and in fact, they're written differently. Commerce's job here is to make a reasoned determination as to where to put this unallocated amount. And the fact that it is unallocated on the financial statement means Commerce has to make a decision. It is reasonable to include it in the overhead because overhead are indirect costs. And as Commerce explained, all the direct costs were directly accounted for in specific lines. So because they were directly accounted for in specific line items, it's reasonable that the unallocated cost would be indirect costs. It just because the plaintiff appellant has a different interpretation and wants to put it in overhead as opposed to
It seems to me that Commerce is putting it in overhead because that increases the dumping margin rather than because there's any support for that notion in the financial statements.
Well, I would again just point, Your Honor, to Appendix 7165 where Commerce explained this. And this isn't a situation where there is a black and white answer. This is an unallocated amount of funds on a financial statement. There is no answer. Commerce has to do the best.
How often does this happen? That there's an unallocated amount of funds in the financial statement.
I believe it's common, Your Honor, during these calculations. I've seen it in my practice. And so Commerce's job is to make a reasoned analysis based on the substantial evidence. And in this case, the Court of International Trade found that it was supported. And on appeal, the only argument here is that the plaintiff appellant wishes it went to a different bucket, but
no,
cannot.
No, that's not the only argument. The argument is... This note 2.12 says that manufacturing overhead is already included in inventory and that Commerce, in reaching an opposite conclusion and adding additional overhead to the inventory number, is not consistent with the note. That's their argument.
I don't believe the plaintiff appellant is really arguing that it's not consistent with the note. The plaintiff appellant has argued that it's not consistent with past practice. And the rebuttal to that is that every financial statement is different. So Commerce, in every individual review, in every case, has to analyze each individual financial statement. Most the plaintiff appellant has argued is that this is different than past practice and therefore unreasonable. The argument that Your Honor has articulated based on the manufacturing overhead in the note is not the argument that's on appeal here.
You made that explicit argument when they were a couple of minutes ago. You weren't listening?
I'm referencing the briefing, Your Honor. Perhaps it's a new argument made on appeal, but their argument in the briefing is that the IFRS shouldn't be looked at, and that in past cases, in other cases, Commerce interpreted financial statements differently. And our retort to that is every financial statement has to be interpreted based on its own. And so reference to other times where Commerce may have allocated this differently isn't supportive for why it should allocate differently in this case.
They've also argued that under Commerce's view, overhead ends up being too high and depreciation too low. What's your response to that?
They argue that, Your Honor, there's no argument that Commerce's calculation was contrary to law, that there was any mistake, that there was no citation to the record. On a substantial evidence review, the plaintiff appellant's job here is to show that it wasn't reasonable, Commerce's determination, or it's not supported by substantial evidence. But the plaintiff appellant doesn't engage with Commerce's analysis of that at all.
If a result is unusual or unreasonable, doesn't that provide some kind of evidence that could be relied on either in support of a factual determination or to detract from it?
Sure, Your Honor. And at the trial level, Ryzen did argue, well, there are these other financial statements and they have way different ratios than here. And Commerce responded to that and said those other financial statements didn't break out the cost categories like they did here. And so long as Commerce addresses that argument, then Commerce can reach a determination that's still supported by substantial evidence, even if when analyzing a different financial statement, like in those other cases, the ratios ended up different. And here, because Commerce explained why it treated the unallocated amount as overhead.
No, it didn't really explain that at all. It didn't explain why manufacturing overhead is largely limited to energy, what the basis for that is. It didn't say, it didn't tell us why that is true.
Your Honor, the most I can say is that in Appendix 7165 and 7166, there's a lengthy discussion of the surrogate financial ratio
calculation. But not of this issue. There's no statement in there. I mean, I'm happy if you can show me one, but I don't see any statement in there that supports the notion that manufacturing overhead in that note is largely limited to energy costs, or that that's the usual practice.
Well, Your Honor, Commerce doesn't say it's largely limited to energy, but it does say on Appendix 7165 that inventory includes material, labor, and what it interprets to be energy. So it does find that inventory includes ML and E.
Yes. There's no question about that, but there's also no question that it seems to include overhead.
Well, Your Honor's point here is that because it references manufacturing overhead, inventory encompasses overhead. But Commerce interprets manufacturing overhead to be energy, not general all overhead.
I understand, but I keep asking, what's the basis for that? And I don't hear any response. I don't see anything in Commerce's decision explaining why that's so.
The basis is the note, Your Honor, and the IFRS, which dictates that...
There's nothing in the accounting standards that says manufacturing overhead is largely energy.
Not largely energy, Your Honor, material, labor, and energy. In other words, inventory can encompass energy.
Well, there's no question about that. The question is whether it includes only that and not other overhead items.
Well, even, Your Honor, even if it included other overhead items, Commerce's ultimate determination is, what is this unallocated sum? Where does it go? And it determined that to put it in an indirect cost, an overhead, that's reasonable because it wouldn't make sense for it to be energy because it's such a small amount that it could never be the energy bucket, right? And so if that were energy, like Ryzen is saying, it would be too small to be energy. So the only place Commerce could reasonably discern where this could be placed, because it's unallocated, is overhead as an indirect cost.
Okay. I think we're out of time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Salzman?
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a couple quick notes. One, we absolutely did raise the fact that point that Note 7 included overhead costs, and that's one of the reasons why it cannot be overhead remaining. We raised that at page 25 of our opening brief. We also raised it in our reply brief. So that is not a new thing at oral argument that was raised before this court. Also want to note this discussion over manufacturing overhead versus energy. These are different things. That's very clear in all the financial ratio calculations where Commerce is putting a column in for energy and a column in for manufacturing costs. Starting at page 7349 of the appendix, we put in several examples of other financial ratio calculations where Commerce is clearly putting energy in a different category than manufacturing overhead. And it also shows many examples of what is usually in manufacturing overhead. And it's not electricity, it's not energy, it's depreciation, it's some rental costs. And again, all the overhead costs we're talking about are all manufacturing costs, because non-manufacturing overhead would be not in the cost of goods sold at all. They're in one of the other notes. So we're only talking about manufacturing overhead when we talk about overhead here. And it's not energy, and that's not supported on the record, that those are the same thing. And we just ultimately submit all of this confusion over what is inventory, what does this note mean, all goes to the point, our main overarching point here, that this note does not clearly bifurcate these things. We have this cost of goods sold remaining, and this note doesn't help that. If you look at our financial ratio calculations, we followed what Commerce did in the prelim. They followed this and what they did in other past cases where they didn't use this type of note at all.
What's your support for the statement that non-manufacturing overhead isn't included in cost of goods sold? Where could I see that?
I mean, I guess that speaks to Commerce's normal breakdown here of cost of sales.
And where could I see that in the record?
I'm just going to point out, I guess, any of the financial ratio examples. I happen to have 7350
open. At 7349.
That's one example. Okay. But if you look at any of the financial ratio calculations, cost of sales is manufacturing only costs, and then admin costs and other distribution costs are separated. So we're only dealing with manufacturing under cost of goods sold. So just to conclude that all of this confusion is only supporting the fact that this note is not helpful and our financial ratio calculations following past practice doesn't rely on an inventory note. It only deducts from cost of goods sold things that are clearly otherwise categorized.
What does the record show about what manufacturing overhead includes normally or here in the statement? Is there something in the record about that?
I am afraid a straight up definition didn't really come up in briefing, so I don't have that. But the pages I was just talking about starting at 7350 are several examples of financial ratio calculations where you can see what Commerce has put in the overhead category in numerous other cases. So I think that since we don't have the actual definition on, that's the best I can offer on the record of some explanations of what is put in the overhead.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.